This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Set me free. Of the chains holding me.
Is anybody out there hearing me? Set me free.
Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life today, with all the stress, chaos, confusion, and just the crazy. And so in the past, I've had Jim Tilley on the program, but he has never completely shared his story, so I have invited him back. Jim is a doctor of clinical psychology, and he's a former pastor, and he resides in Michigan. So, Jim, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here, Mike.
So thank you for doing this, and let's kick this off and get into your story.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you, dear friend, for having me, and welcome to everybody who's listening. I think my story begins in a very universal place. And I would say that after salvation itself, the greatest need we have is to be loved. And loved not because we've had to earn it or prove it or become someone else in order to be loved, but just loved by sheer grace, just because we're a child of God, if we've accepted Christ. You know, we all need love. My story is one for looking for love in all the wrong places. Yeah. We are all sinners. You know, we all have a sin nature, but not everyone falls into sexual addiction. So I'm glad and honored to share my story, because I think the key thing for dealing with sexual addiction is to know, you know, specifically what sexual addiction has done for you in your soul, what it's tried to cure in a wrong way. So yes, repentance is key, absolutely. The dealing with sin is key. But specifically, we need to know our own history, because that's where we specifically went wrong, and that's certainly where I went wrong. And I share my story in the hopes that, you know, this will help give you some ways to unpack yours. And I pray for you that you can do that. So for me, I, and as Mike mentioned, I have a PhD in clinical psychology, and that was my background. The key issue as we're growing up, and it certainly was for me, I'll speak in the first person here, is dealing with our parents. Messages and relationships and the ways they treated us are huge. There's some in the Christian community that don't think you need to deal with the past. I absolutely think that's wrong. You must deal with how we got tangled in sexual brokenness and where and how that happened, and let the Lord unravel it from there. So for me, as with all people, you know, the core issue is attachment to mom and dad. For me, my parents were both pretty warm people in many ways. I had some good things in our relationship growing up. But also, you know, suddenly they could be incredibly shaming. And I'll share more about that in a bit. But, and so that gave me a very broken and mixed kind of attachment. Am I loved or am I not? And when I'm not being loved, when I'm being sort of critical, shamed, kind of nasty comments, well, is that what they really feel? Or do they really feel the warmth? I didn't know. I concluded, like any kid would, there must be something wrong with me. And so my life question, you know, really had to deal with, how do I deal with this insecure, jittery, fragile place inside, this void inside, where I need deep, safe, solid, consistent love, like everyone does, but where can I get that? How can I nail love down? How can I find the right place for love? Well, my first thought, and it wasn't a conscious thought, but it's a little one, I thought if I can only make them happy, then that will cure them and they'll plane out and be sort of consistent and nurturing all the time. So I became a people pleaser. I became a chameleon. And the problem with chameleons is they forget their true color. But they're always changing into the color they're on so they don't get nailed by a hunting bird. And, you know, so that was me. I really lost my sense of who I was, desperately trying to figure out if I can only be who mom and dad really want me to be, then the tumblers will all align, the gumball will fall, and I'll be fine. Well, that didn't work. So then after that, and with that, I decide, well, I need to be perfect. If I can be above criticism, then I won't get any. If I can be perfect and there's nothing shameful about me, then I'll never be toxically shamed. Well, that doesn't work either, obviously. So where am I going to get solid, safe sense of love, you know, and solid inside? Well, I hit puberty. And as one author said, it's not that I started to notice girls. It's more like I ceased to notice anything else. you know, and this was the miniskirt era. And wham, you know, I never had had these kind of feelings before. Flamingly wonderful, blissful, soothing, joyous. And I thought, well, this must be it because it feels so great. This must be what I'm looking for, to feel loved, to feel soothed, to feel safe, to feel joyous. Wow, this is like a blowtorch. Well, of course, lust, you know, it isn't it. What I was experiencing was largely, you know, mirage, normal, you know, adolescent arousal, but also just, you know, that this is going to save me? No, that's a mirage. So what I did was to go to the main person who's going to help me know what to do with these feelings, how to interpret them, what do they mean. So I went to my dad. And my father was a great guy in many ways, warm and kind, but he didn't know what to do with a teenager. So when I hit puberty, he was the wrong person to go to. Later I found out he had about every sexual addiction in the book, including going to prison for indecent exposure. And, you know, I share these stories of my father not to desecrate his memory. I forgave him long ago, and we ended with a great relationship before he passed. But I share them so that you and I can understand how the shaping forces of fathering go wrong. Frequently, that's an issue in pornography and sexual addiction. Not always. Some of you had a great dad, but still you had your own story that gave you, left you with voids. But I want to share a little about my relationship with my dad, because that's where a lot of this went wrong. And then I'll share what my father in heaven does to make it right. So in essence, this is what my dad taught me and shaped me about the meaning of females and the meaning of all these incredibly exotic, intense feelings about sexuality and arousal. Well, here's an example. When I was 13, we were at a poolside in a hotel, and he was taking one of those old 8mm cameras and filming the girls in bikinis right in front of my mom and my brother and me. And I was like, whoa. My mom gets up a beach towel and hangs it in front of his camera, and he just turns the camera over to the side and films other women. And my mom is just exasperated and making snappy comments, which is totally understandable. But, you know, how desecrating to women and how desecrating to my mom, who, you know, was kind of inconsistent with me shaming wise, because I think she was just so mad at my dad all the time. I thought she was mad about me, but it was really about my dad. Anyway, so that's the first education I got about what you do with arousal. You make movies of it. You know, and just be a wild, free person.
And how old were you when Dad did this?
I was about 13, and right in the zone of huge amount of arousal. And how do I try to understand it? About 13. Yeah. And my brother was 15. At the dinner table, he used to tease everybody about he's going to take my brother to the Mustang Ranch, which is a house of prostitution in Las Vegas. You know, and get him trained in right. And my mom would get real mad and upset, and he would just laugh. So he had pornography problems, multiple affairs, a lifelong secret affair with starting in high school with one of his teachers. So, like, you know, literally a 50-year affair. All this behind my mom's and later wife's back for a long time. So I think to pull this all together, core shaping event for me was when I was 16, I got the car, went on a date, and then I came back. The car was all muddy. It had been raining. We were up at the smooching place up on a hill. And I was just like a young buck, just sort of bragging about the action I got up there. And what, of course, I was looking for was interpretation. I was looking for guidance. I was looking for dad. You know, these gals, it's just, wow, this is just amazing, exciting. What is this all about? Rather than giving me any kind of solid Christian mentoring, he looked at me, said, "You wouldn't know what to do with a girl if you had one," flipped his newspaper, and we never talked about gals again. Mm. And so I was just core shamed. The message was, you, Jim, are inferior, and, you know, you're not a man until you figure out how to use women. Because basically what was taught by that, women are objects. And yet, you know, paradoxically for me, they're also kind of like goddesses. The reason they feel all powerful is because they are. So you need to get out there and control them and use them and worship them and give your worth and identity away to them, because they have the power to heal your toxic shame and insecurity and make you a man. And the message also was, you can totally make up your own rules about what you do in this worship of goddesses, porn, whatever. And that's what my dad did. He was in church every Sunday. He was an elder in the church, Sunday school teacher on Sunday, popping out for exposure in a trench coat on Monday. The core message being, living a compartmentalized double or triple life is totally fine, because really, you know, you yourself are a god, so you can do that. But it didn't go well for me. I remember in junior high, about the same time, two girls sitting next to me on a bench at lunchtime out in the playground, acting like they're interested in me, scooting closer to me, and then glanced at each other, looked at me, looked at each other, started giggling, and just snarled at me and ran away. And so basically what I did, Mike, and everybody else, I started looking for girls that wouldn't run away. This was the pre-internet era, obviously, in the super early 70s. So went to Playboy magazine. And the illusion of fantasy, which is what pornography and sexual addiction really run on, was, you know, they're always there for you anytime. You can pull them out of your hidden stack anytime you want. They're smiling warmly. The fantasy is, I want you. I took off my clothes for you. But fantasy, for me, could never fix what reality is wounded. So part of the way out for me was, I was in a sexual addiction group I helped to lead in the 90s, early 90s, as a pastor and as a friend of a couple of guys, and we're trying to get out, deal with this stuff. One of the guys had a problem with strip clubs, and he thought, you know, this is a great thing. These girls, I come in here and they just can't wait to take their clothes off for me because I'm such a man. Well, he played out this fantasy, got a hold of one of them and said, you know, what do you think of us guys that come in here, thinking she's going to ooh and ah over him? She looked at him pretty coldly. I guess she was ending her shift. She looked at him pretty coldly and said, guys like you are just wallets. Mm. Poof! You know, and I think for me that applied to the porn issue. I began to realize I'm just being used, man. This is phony. I got onto the internet with porn only once or twice when we first got internet. And I got to a site that had a scantily clad gal, and it's one of these things where they give you a free page, but then you got to pay to go deeper, of course. There's a scantily clad gal on there, and the title underneath it was, Welcome to the Den of the Goddess. And by God's grace alone, the Holy Spirit came upon me, not my doing at all. Holy Spirit came on me. I switched off the computer. I almost threw it across the room. I broke down before the Lord and said, Lord, what am I doing? And I'm worshiping. I'm worshiping. I'm giving my value, my passion, my identity, my everything to this phony image that just wants bucks out of me, that just sees me as a wallet. And, you know, for me, the core breakpoint was finally, after, you know, dishonoring my wife. I got married in 82, and pornography, of course, followed me right into the marriage. Built up a stash of porn, confessed it to the wife, hurt her terribly, throw it away, promised never to do it again, you know, build up more, going through this. And I realized, you know, this is vicious and dishonoring to the woman who gave her life to me and loves me so. The double life is tearing her and me apart. That was really huge to sit on that one, you know, and really get to a place where I really wanted real, authentic intimacy, not false. And I realized, you know, it came to me, the Lord gave me this. You know, the centerfolds didn't go through 25 hours of horrendous labor to have my first son. She did. The centerfolds didn't hold me gently when I was a stinking, unbathable, unshaved mess during three major depressions I went through. She did. The centerfolds didn't stay with me day and night for 13 torturous days when I was in the hospital for cancer surgery, almost died several times. And she stayed with me. She got pneumonia. She was getting sicker and sicker and sicker, but she wouldn't leave my side. Why? Because her love was real. And it dawned on me that she wasn't leaving. She was going to die with me if she had to. None of the centerfolds did that. But her sacrifice and love pointed me again to the true love, the one who did die for me in Jesus. So continuing in my life, you know, the ultimate source for healing, for pornography, is falling in love with something else, someone else, falling in love with Jesus and growing in that love. I follow quite a bit of John Bevere's writing, a Christian author, and he candidly said out of the massive up and down struggle he had with pornography, up and down, not breaking it. And finally, he's just on the floor before the Lord sobbing, and he says, Lord, show me, speak to me. What am I missing? And the Lord very gently and graciously said to him, John, you love this stuff more than me. And so I've been on a long, long, and a lifelong and eternal quest to fall more in love with Jesus. You know, when I think about, can I really fall in love with Jesus? Is that what he wants? Well, look at the prodigal son story. You know, the father saw him, that son, while he was a long way off, because the father was out looking for him. He ran to him. One guy said, that's the only time God has ever ran. And as the translations say, he fell on his neck and embraced him and kissed him. And friends, that's how God feels about me, and that's how he feels about you. I remember hugging my son when he was swinging on a swing, and he says, why are you hugging me, Dad, for swinging on a swing? And I said, no, just because you're you. And friends, Jesus has that heart leap about us, the heart that just leaps up about us. And that is the only place we can be healed. So that's chapter one of my sexual addiction story. I'll try to make it brief here in terms of time, and we can go on. But chapter two was simply this. God, to his glory and credit alone, not me, but God, in falling in love with Jesus, helped deliver me from porn and masturbation about in 1995. But then I made the worst mistake of my life. I thought I had arrived. You know, I thought I was done. I thought I had graduated. Graduated from what? Well, you know, I guess graduating from really, really, really needing Jesus. I approached the problem of sexual addiction like I used to approach the problem of being assigned the chore of picking dandelions as a kid. Oh, if you just pull off the top, hey, you get them done a lot faster. Well, no, you don't. You left the roots. I did not deal with the roots of woman worship. So in 2013, I was counseling a woman who had a very, very empty, absent father emotionally and suffered greatly from people-pleasing and depression from that emptiness. And as we minister together, the fatherly love of God brought her a long way. But I remember the day like it was yesterday. You know, she kind of just hit a plateau, and she was not getting better. I hurt for her so much. I really cared for this person. We had gotten very close. And I have to confess, something snapped in me. I just said, you know, I'm not going to leave you in this position. So foolishly, I went over to the couch and I just sat down next to her and just held her. And she kind of softened and melted in. And I thought, well, you know, she's a woman and I kind of worship them, which was foolish. But I wasn't feeling lust. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll just treat her like a daughter. Let her just be like a little teeny girl for a while. And I just want to squeeze my love in you. So I picked her up, held her in my lap. And, you know, in hindsight, I realized I was receiving the mothering I never got. I committed a capital sin as a counselor by, you know, allowing my neediness, my needs to intrude. And that became a pattern for not just us, but several other women. And eventually, you know, this was not lustful at first. God is my witness. At first it wasn't, but it was still wrong, obviously. You know, bad practice, obviously. But lust eventually entered the picture. You can't hold an attractive young woman on your lap without eventually getting aroused. And there I am making up all my own rules and basically doing Genesis 3, Garden of Eden. You know, I can do this. You know, I would have corrected a ministry intern working under me doing that immediately. But no, I could do it. You know, and eventually the whole thing blew up. Several of the wives told their husbands, and that blew up. Totally understandable. I sinned against the Lord, my wife, against them, against my church. It was terrible sin on my part. I resigned from the position, begged for forgiveness, but, you know, that really didn't go. That's a whole nother long story, maybe. But today I'm basically, you know, continuing to work on forgiving people for not forgiving me. The fact that it was handled badly, my fall, does not mean I didn't sin. I did. I did sin terribly. But God has been working on my codependency because I crave their approval. And I'm back in counseling again, which I think is essential for these issues. And I'm even this week, I've had some great breakthroughs about how Jesus doesn't need anyone else to forgive me and make me new and give me a new beginning because he has. So in a nutshell, Mike, that's my story. And you can ask any questions you want. That would be fine.
Well, thank you, Jim, first off, for being transparent with all of this. I mean, you've been honest and open with your sin, and I appreciate that. And one of the reasons that I invite people to do this is because it gives hope to other people.
Right.
So, and so our listeners know we're going to be continuing this conversation with Jim, and I'm going to be following up with quite a few questions, but we got about 2 minutes left now, Jim.
Okay.
So talk to the man who's lost and trying to find his way in about a minute.
Right, okay. Well, brother, I love you. On the next call, I'll give my email. You're welcome to email me. I think the bottom line I want to say to you is God has not loved you less for your struggle, but you need to find a good counselor and some brothers. And I'm dear friends with Mike here, and I love this Blazing Grace ministry. It can help you. My core one-minute one was, brother, don't try to do this alone. Almost no one gets out of sexual addiction by themselves. I couldn't. I went to counseling for a decade. I was in groups for many years, and they were powerful and effective. So, brother, God loves you enough not only to die for you, but to walk with you, with your brothers. So please, 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 I get on my knees and beg you, get help. There's nothing to be ashamed of, because God already knows you're a sinner, and he loves you. He's not ashamed to call you his son. That's what I would say.
Well, thank you, Jim. I really appreciate it. And as I mentioned, we will be continuing this conversation with Jim next week, and you can listen to these broadcasts on our website at blazinggrace.org or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. But for now, I just want to leave off with Jim's story is being replayed every single day in every church in America right now. Maybe in that same way, but this is a huge problem and one we cannot afford to play ostrich with. So thank you, Jim, and thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.